Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts
Oh, you said something really good and missed it.
I know, it's crazy. So you say that you live there in the woods, Elaine. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I mean, I live in Asheville on the east side of Asheville, so on the outskirts of Asheville. And we actually live in a place that's actually literally in the woods. So my house backs onto the Swannanoa River here. So regularly we have visitors, all kinds of different things. I've seen bobcats. We have deer that wander across here. This is all, across the other side of the river. It's all woodland as well. So we see deer, and we've seen families of bears. So throughout the year, we see all kinds of different bears, and they actually cross on our land. So they cross, then cross the river. So we've seen them swimming. We've seen them on a hot day, just chilling out in the river, just playing, kids playing. We've had, I watched a mum give one of her cubs swimming lessons once and carry it out of the water. So we can go out, you know, just have a walk down the road and you might meet a bear. So from an
now
English,
I mean, you know, okay, so let me ask the question. Do bears really shit in the woods?
I think they do. They do it in my garden too sometimes. So,
wow, Elaine Bailey Anderson. Wow, you are here with me on the edge. I had to put in a funny there. You are an amazing woman. I can't believe that you have the courage. Cause see, I'd be a nervous wreck. I like the little creatures. I got a little squirrel. Me and him are having a fight because he's eating too much of my vegetables in the garden. So I have my husband put a trap out there. I won't hurt him. I'll capture him, but I'll take him right back to the park. And we got some lizards and stuff. We got great people like you here on the edge today. Elaine is the founder and CEO of Coach Brilliance LLC, a coaching academy that serves professional coaches, therapists, and service-based business owners, offering training and certifications, as well as business and marketing strategies. There's a whole lot of stuff that she's doing, but she works with Integrams, and I'm gonna ask her, what is that all about? How does that channel the energy? She works in a very spiritual, earthy kind of place, as we just talked about. She lives in the woods there. And she is a woman from the UK, transplanted here to the US. I'm gonna ask her how life is different for her. So welcome her to the edge, Elaine Bailey Anderson. How are you, beautiful?
I am great, thank you. Thank you so much, April, for inviting me. I'm really honored to be here.
I'm excited to have you. Please share with my brains. Oh, I forgot to show you guys where you are. I do that from time to time. You're here on the edge. I don't want you to forget your address. So tell my brains a little bit about you and how you show up in the world, beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, let me share a little bit about my story, if you like. I mean, I believe that life is truly a journey. It's, you know, it's constantly changing shape. And I believe that we're being called here to evolve through the layers and move forward, or alternatively stay stuck in the same experiences over and over. And that really is kind of summarizes a bit all about my career as well, because learning's been my life. I've loved helping other people grow and move forward and make change since my teens, actually. So and you know, we're always growing and evolving. Change isn't always easy, as we know, and we've experienced recently, a lot of us, I'm sure, with the pandemic and so on. But whether it's chosen or imposed upon us, it's important to remember that significant change always brings opportunity if you're open to seeing it. And that really sums up my life too, because I've always been a bit of an adventurer and a risk taker too. So everything that I've ever done, anything big that I've ever achieved, I've always started before I thought I was ready. And I did it scared. I followed my intuition and grew into it on the way. So transformation and transition and transformation has been a constant in my lifelong journey, and that they are my lifelong journey companions, which brings me to the fact that I do have a funny accent here. And
it's beautiful. You know, I love it.
Thank you. And, you know, as I say, you know, for me on a personal level, I've experienced change many times in my life, as I'm sure many, many of your listeners and watchers have. But
brains, we got to call them brains. They like,
got to call them brains. Good. Yeah, absolutely. So many of your brains have. And so in 2013 was really a great example of this, and how I've come, you know, how I continue to do what I do in terms of learning and developing and helping people grow and develop themselves and be the best they possibly can be. But in 2013, I made a decision to leave the country of my birth, which is England, and move to the USA. And I left behind all the familiarity of my homeland, you know, where I lived and worked all my life. So I sold my house, I sold my car, I gave everything away except what I could fit into 4 suitcases and a laptop bag. And it was 4 suitcases and a laptop bag because that's all I could personally on my own physically carry through an airport. So I boarded a plane and headed Charlotte International Airport, arrived here in the USA, and then moved. It came directly to Asheville, which has been my home ever since. I did bring 2 kitty cats with me as well, 2 English kitty cats. But they traveled separately and they came a few days later, which was a terrible waiting moment for them as they were traveling, you know, in the air and going through cargo and stuff. Right. But I mean, this move for me kind of represents a lot of what, you know, whether it's big change or small change for many of my clients, but this was a huge leap of faith for me, you know, and I was determined to make it on my own. So even though I chose the change, I made the decision and decided I was going to come here, and I ended up, I came here to work with my best friend in her coaching business and helping her grow her coaching business. But nothing prepares you for the number of challenges that come with deciding to move your life 4,000 plus miles across the ocean. So, you know, it requires a whole different investment of energy. You literally have to rethink everything. And that taught me a lot about myself, because I left behind the old identities of my ego that I'd relied upon in all my life, who I was and who my resume said I was and everything. And I was forced to let go of the old and familiar because it was no longer relevant in my new world. And to begin with, it was an adventure. It was great fun. After all, I was living the dream. I was that intrepid explorer in the braving the new world. You know, braving.
You came there. You came to the U.S. Your friend hired you, but she also fired you.
She did ultimately. Yeah, I mean, that was because.
Well, I mean, you know, that's a joke. I'm sure that, you know, she hasn't made sense.
Well, she's my best friend, and we joke about it. But at the time, she had to. It was about 18 months ago. She had to, because of the pandemic and stuff.
I understand, but with that's scary too, because you go, okay, well, I've come here, I've got a safety net, and now people come up under me. Here we go again with this transition thing. So you decide to branch out on your own. So what are you doing now?
Yeah, well, I mean, and I think that brings up a really good point, because change can be chosen, like me moving here, or it can be imposed, like me, you know, like it's suddenly happening and, you know, and things changing. Well, I was actually setting up Coach Brilliant already, my coaching company, but I was going to launch it in 2021. So I was actually getting ready to move forward, but when this happened right at the beginning of the pandemic, right in the first month of you know, shutdown and so on, then it kind of lit the fire underneath my ass, if you don't mind me saying.
No, that's fine.
And it got me moving. It got me taking action. It got me making things happen. So, I mean, first of all, you go into a little bit of a shock of, you know, when something's imposed upon you, it can feel like an end. It can feel like things are ending. But the thing about endings is that, you know, endings can feel so final, but there are new beginnings hidden in all our endings. If you are open to exploring it, if you're, you know, and you're awakening your inner courage to face those challenging situations courageously.
And also, a lot of times, if you're really ready and willing to end it.
Absolutely. I was ready. Some people
don't want to put a period. They want to put a comma. They want to put a semicolon.
They hold on.
They hold on to it.
We hold on. We cling on to what we know.
That's right. What is familiar and what's comfortable, but you have to feel the fear yet do it anyway. There's challenges. There's opportunities. And a lot of times you have to let things go. Your partner moved there to North Carolina with you as well, correct?
Well, I met him in North Carolina. So originally, he's from South Carolina, originally from Charleston, but I met him, we met in Asheville. So, we started dating and then we got married. We got married in 2014.
See how that just ended one part of your life? You came with two kitty cats. You got here and found your husband and got married and got you some bears in the woods. Tell us about your coaching program. What are you pouring into business owners and therapists?
Well, what I talk about transition and so on is helping people. I mean, whether you're setting up a business, whether you're already running a business, you know, there's always going to be new beginnings. There's always new things. There's always things changing shape and evolving. So very much what I do is I help my clients to actually step into that from two angles. One from a strategy perspective. So my clients are often, they're all service-based business owners usually. There are some leaders in organizations as well that work with me who are, you know, stepping into new roles. But service-based business owners are like coaches, consultants, therapists who are growing their own business. And the cool thing about all these types of people is that they're growing themselves as well. Because one of the biggest things that I teach people is that you can only help others and support others as to the extent that you know yourself.
Absolutely.
So if you grow yourself, the deeper you go, the deeper you grow, but the deeper you can help and support and grow others, which in the service-based business industry, like what, you know, we're talking about here with therapists and coaches, then it's always about learning and growing. It's always about getting to know yourself. And that's the biggie. I think that's the key in terms of this. So,
and you say getting to know yourself, Elaine, a lot of people don't know themselves.
That's right. Many of us don't.
And again, like I said, with the subconscious mind, there is a lot of us that will never know ourselves, or there is so much to know about ourselves. What does it take in this climate and this environment to be a good leader?
What it takes is I go back to understanding yourself. You know, there are three elements I see with leadership, being a good leader, whether it's in your business that you're running, whether you're a leader in a family, whatever context, or a leader in an organization, is that you have to be able to lead yourself first. So you're leading yourself, learning. If you don't know yourself, if you don't understand how you show up or how you interact with people and you react to everything, there's a difference between reaction and responding. And if you just react and it's your ego reacting, if we're feeling defensive unconsciously, there's tons of unconscious patterns that play out all the time. We're in pattern all the time. And these are our defense mechanisms, a lot of them that we learn in childhood through the lens of our personality, which for me, I fell in love with the Enneagram about 20 years ago. And it's the one, and I've taught and trained all kinds of personality tools, Myers-Briggs and all the rest of it, but this tool is the deepest and widest, because you can really go deeply and get to the heart of the matter with somebody. So it really is about, if you can start to recognize the patterns and recognize when you're getting into defense and reacting, then you can actually start to create a little gap between what's going on, and you can start to observe it. So it's stepping back, and you become the observer a little bit in your life. So rather than react and then end up in the same old situation, because how we think affects how we feel, which ultimately then affects our action or inaction and the results that we make. And then often if it's a negative thing, our results, our outcomes reinforce the original thinking. So we're in this self-fulfilling prophecy of doom. You know, it's always
a constant cycle. And the thing is, people have to allow, they have to allow space. They have to be good listeners. They have to let other people influence them. You know, brains, newsflash, you don't know every damn thing.
No, that's true.
You may think that you do. To be good delegators, to allow other people's to shine. I have been extremely fortunate in my corporate career that I have had some amazing CEOs, CFOs, COOs that have taken me under their wing and really allowed me to shine by incorporating my ideas, even though I wasn't to their stature, or maybe I didn't have the degrees or the letters behind their name, but they were open to ideas.
That's awesome.
The world is so different now. Again, as we talked about, it's in flux. It's how we react. There's so much coming at us at warp speed right now. We don't understand. We don't give ourselves time to process it.
No, we don't.
You know, and it's really, really scary. Tell us about the Enneagram.
Yeah, I mean, I have a huge appreciation, as I've said, you probably guessed that already, for the Enneagram. And I actually can't imagine coaching without it. It runs as an operating system, if you like, in the background of my coaching business. And it really is an effective is a real effective tool or system for coaching people. So it helps to bring that conscious awareness into the foreground, so you can start to create that self-awareness. It's kind of a highly accurate roadmap, if you like, a guide back to our personal, professional, and spiritual growth. And it's a great tool for awakeners to who we really are, the truth of who we are. If we can let go of all, we start to be able to see identities for what they are. They're not the truth. It's just the ego protecting itself. So each type, and there are nine altogether, has its own set of addictive patterns that hold us back and keep us stuck. So as we move into our daily life, we've experienced things and we've reacted to these things. And we create these addictive patterns that unconsciously play out when something happens. So these patterns form our personality structure, or put in another way, the Enneagram actually helps us to expose the lies that we tell ourselves about who we think we are.
Wait a minute, girl, all this time we've been lying to ourselves?
Our thoughts are lying.
And people don't identify with the lies, you know.
They do.
It's a matter of perception.
Absolutely.
They're believing this, and they believe the lies of others. As we were talking in the green room right now, we don't know what is this word called truth anymore.
No.
We manipulate it and construct it and frame it to suit us. That can be very dangerous. Yes. Very, very dangerous.
Absolutely.
I mean, you could go outside and have this illusion. Oh, they're in these bears are in my backyard, and they're such beautiful little things. They're still wild animals, and they will eat you up. You come near that cub.
Yes.
So absolutely. It's how we frame things. Why do you think people are so distorted? See, I work with an ego coach. And she's brilliant. And she's taught me how to nurture, love, support, structure the ego, because we crush down so many things that once it finally comes to surface, it erupts like a volcano. And then we're so numb to everything that's been happening around us that we don't realize, and we're shocked by this monster that we have become.
Yeah, absolutely. There's different nuances of that with the nine patterns in the Enneagram. And, you know, I think what happens is, you know, working with something like the Enneagram can help you to deepen your understanding and conscious awareness. So you start to recognize your innate strengths. Mm-hmm. And like you're saying, you know, the ego isn't all bad, but it has a bad press. So there's the balance of both of those. The ego is really just trying to defend you and keep you safe, even though it's kind of can have delusions around that, because it's just from previous experiences and what's happened, and it's all, you know, it's reactive rather than actually responsive. So if you can begin to recognize your innate strengths, any blind spots and assumptions, then what you can do is start to learn how to break free from limitations. So, you know, it's actually looking at things and knowing that our thoughts are just thoughts, and there are thousands and thousands of them in every day. And if we're not careful, we grab hold of a thought, and then it's like that superhighway. We go 9,000 miles an hour, and we're actually then obsessed by that thought, or we believe it to be true. We filter everything else out. We look for evidence to support it, rather than actually, oh, okay, it's just a thought. Now, and it's actually stepping back and empowering us to make better personal and professional choices and have better relationships and to live your best life. So
people always use these terms, show up authentic.
Right. What
does that look like for you? When I ask you to show up in your authentic self, what do I see?
What you see, what I believe that you see is that you're letting go of things. You know, it's letting go of the things that trigger you. It's being open. There's a humility to it. It's understanding. It's like you said earlier on, April, you mentioned that, you know, I'm not right all the time, you know, and we're all learning and growing, and we all have a different lens, a different perspective. I think being authentic is being open to the possibilities, is recognizing that somebody might have a different opinion to you, or might be seeing something through a different lens. It might not be, then there might not be a right or wrong to it. It's just different. Yeah. And it's actually understanding and being open to and letting go of things that don't serve you. So by being authentic is, you know, it's getting to the truth quicker. It's being honest quicker. It's not, you know, and I don't mean that in a belligerent way, like having a go at somebody because you don't like something. There's lots of different ways to present things, but it's, you know, respecting your own boundaries. It's saying no when you mean no. It's not saying yes and then twisting and contorting, and depending on your personality will depend on whether you'll disappear or whether you'll do something begrudgingly and so on. So, and I think it goes back to this piece about knowing yourself really well. So the more that you know, and it's a lifetime journey, it unfolds. Yes. I mean, I've done a lot of work with the Enneagram. I'm still doing a lot of work with the Enneagram, and I'll continue, and that's just one of the things that I, you know, one of the modalities that I work with. But the more I learn, the more I know. There's things that trigger you, and is understanding why that triggers you. And
your personality and type, you know, because that's exactly what she teaches me too. It's called the Life Spider System. So she's really not an ego coach, but with that information, I am able to read other people. And I found that's very, very valuable. I am able to support them where they are weak and give them what they need. You may walk into a room and, you know, the head of the table might be a person that's very insecure. They really might need a lot of attention. Go ahead, pour that attention into them. There might be a person there that is very shy. Give them an opportunity to shine. What do you think about these two things? Fear and boundaries.
Sorry, fear and boundaries.
Fear and boundaries. In shaping all of this, you know, we're doing all of this work, but we also have fear and we also have boundaries that keep us safe.
Right. Well, I think, you know, just even building back on what you just said, again, you know, those 9 personality types that I work with, you know, which is probably a similar thing to the spider thing. Well, everybody has a different lens on things. So, you know, some people are more fearful for others. Some Enneagram types, like the 9 type is very, it can be a very laid back type, can be very, wants to keep the peace, wants to keep everybody happy.
Well, let's dial back. I'm sorry, let's dial back. Can you read them off to us? Can you tell us what the 9 are?
I can do that for you.
So that we can have an idea and see, you know, how we can have a little fun here and kind of maybe shape ourselves and see where we fall into this, because we can fall into more than one category, correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, when I'm actually teaching the Enneagram, what we have is there are 9 types on the Enneagram, you know, the 9 types, but what you'll find is you have a predominant type. Okay. So the predominant type is the type that you tend to default to in situations. So when you default to that type, then that is the strongest energetic that comes through. And you can tell it in energy. It's just like you were saying a minute ago, you know how you said that you can walk into the room and you can see the you know, that person coming into the room, and you know whether they're more shy or they're more open. So you can see that all the different types all the different types. So yeah, I mean, there are nine types. I mean, okay. I'll just go through them really quickly. The one type, first of all, is can be very judgmental of themselves. So they don't want to make mistakes. So they are, they can be very tight looking and coiled, because they have a very bad inner critic as well, a very critical inner critic that actually that can actually get in the way. So what their focus is about not making mistakes, is about getting things right and making sure they get it right the first time. There's a right way and a wrong way. That's a brief description of the one. The two is, and that comes, that's a body type. I'll just tell you that. We don't have time to go into all the details today. There's so much to tell about the Enneagram. But the two type is known as a helper. So the helper is going to be the one that bends over backwards, always there to help, always there to encourage, is always there saying, how can I help you? You know, they might be leaning in, they might be huggy and you know, how can I help you? Smiling.
Now with this damn COVID, they better be masky.
Oh yeah, they better. Yeah, I mean, I can imagine it's a terrible time for the two, because they can't hug anybody, you know. Right. But what they do is they put their needs at the back. So that they numb out on their needs. They don't think they have any needs. What they're doing is looking for love. They're looking for acceptance with the other person. Okay. So they're always leaning. They're always leaning to support that other person. So that's our twos. So they give away their value, their energy, and their time to others, if you like. Threes are trying to be someone or something other than their authentic self often, because they're sometimes known as the achiever, because through their life their success is, or they perceive that their success is measured by their achievements, and that's where they feel their value is. So they might be the one at school that was always winning the awards, always doing the sports, getting awards. As long as they're achieving, as long as they've been successful, go. And they may not be as in touch with their feelings as a result of it. It's about success. The challenge is that they can't stop. So if
they suffer with overachiever syndrome. And people don't think that really smart people suffer with that. They think it comes easy, but it exiles them from the general population. A lot of times these people are introverts because other people don't match up. And right. It's not intentionally, but you know, they want to stay in the same lane.
They do. Yeah. Yeah. And I've coached in the corporate world, and when I was doing some executive coaching, I actually coached a guy who was a three on the Enneagram who actually burst into tears at one point, because he said he did not know if he didn't have work, there was nothing. He did not know what to do. He had to keep busy because he did not know what to do with any spare time he had, because he was so conditioned to striving for success and being the best and so on. And it's, I mean, threes are very heart-centered when they've found their authentic self and they're actually working and they can create that balance, but often they'll burn out and they can be known as workaholics. Ones can be as well, you know, because they're doing it the right way and trying to be right all the time. Yeah. So that's our threes. Fours are very special and unique, or that's how they like to think of themselves. They're often in childhood, what happens to a four is they feel othered. It's something called othered by their family. So they're different in some way. They're nurturers, whoever were the nurturers, you know, that maybe had a sick child or something like that, that they needed to take care of. And this person kind of felt like they were outside the family unit. Mm-hmm. So as a result of that, they feel that they're special, unique. They are very heart-centered, very deep in the heart. They're very attuned to feelings. And
empathic.
They can be very empathic as well and really tuned into that. You can get empaths from other types too, but you know, there's a melancholy-ness to them. You know, they can get really wrapped into their story, and they feel that they're sensitive and unique and intuitive from there. So what they're doing
are they the crybaby?
They can be. They can burst into tears. Yeah, definitely. They're seeking, what they're doing is searching for the ideal situation, really, that compensates for what they think is missing in them. Oh, wow. So, you know, whereas a three is striving to be the best, you know, a two is putting their needs last for self-sacrifice, and the one is setting and maintaining those high standards. The four is very much feels like there's something missing, or this they're dysfunctional in some way. Wow. They're very sensitive. They can be a little sensitive too. So our fives then, they live up and back in the heads. They're very they're a head type. We would call them a head type. Five, sixes, and sevens are head types. And they are two, threes, and fours are heart types, just incidentally, and ones, eights, and nines are body types for the three centers of intelligence. But the five then is very much about the world is very sensitive. It's very draining. They have they focus on ideas and concepts. They're up in the head. They might be the type of person that you find that, you know, you might be having a party and they're sitting with their iPad reading a story. Or they'll sit and not really interact with the world, or if they do interact, sometimes there can be an awkwardness about them in terms of, because they're bringing that intellectual sense out, they may describe things in a way that they know and understand in their brain, but they don't, that for somebody else to understand it might be hard and difficult for them to understand. So there's almost a stinginess to them, but the stinginess is in the sense of their energy, because they feel that other people drain their energy really quickly. So if I'm around people and they ask me lots of questions, I'm going to be exhausted. So it really is that I'm smart, I'm perceptive, I'm capable. It's all about needing. They don't need much in life. What they want to do is they're very self-sufficient and they don't need others. But they will have they could have another in their life, a significant other. But they're very much withdrawn in that way, if that makes sense.
That does make sense. That's pretty cool.
Often their intellect will take them to, you know, they'll know obscure things and they'll be able to talk for hours about these obscure things. And they may even live in a fantasy world in the head, which is the safest place for them, because the world is overwhelming. Mm. Our sixes are focused all on being safe and secure. They're our warriors, if you like.
Okay.
So they'll be, there's different types, but I'm just giving you very generality here now. They're very loyal and dependable to other people once they trust you, but they're looking for things outside of themselves for support and guidance, for safety and security. They might be sitting in a room, they might be scanning the room looking for the exits to make sure that they stay safe and secure. That's the type of person that if you go on a picnic with, they'll have thought of everything. They'll bring for the rain, for the wind, for the snow, for whatever. You know, you might just show up and then, oh, I should have brought a raincoat.
right.
But that's what they will do. So they can be the warriors, definitely the warriors. That can be endemic of an average level on that pattern. So they'll worry about everything. You know, they don't trust their own judgment. They don't trust their own inner authority. So when that person is learning and growing and opening up, like we were saying about getting in tune and knowing yourself, then it's starting to learn to be in balance with that and to trust that. That's being safe and secure. That's wow. Our sixes. Now our sevens are full of possibilities. What's the next thing? What's the next thing? What's the next thing? They'll be eating lunch. Yeah, I am too. So they'll be you might find yourself eating lunch, but thinking about what you're going to have for dinner. You know, it's very hard sometimes for sevens to be in the moment. And they're actually looking for the grass is always green. They're always planning. They're always moving forward. They're always moving to the next thing at a fast pace because they're trying to avoid pain. So anything that's pain and sadness, anything that feels uncomfortable, to kind of push that down. And I know from my own experiences in life, being a seven is for many, many years, I used to think everything was happy and I'd try and keep everybody up, keep everything. Right, I'd be the light in the soul. Or I'd be the, you know, the one that, oh, we love you being around because you're fun and you're friendly and you're jokey. We're often jokey. But what we're doing this to keep everybody, we want everybody to be happy, to right. avoid pain, to avoid, and we suffer from anxiety, there's anxiousness that can come up there.
I didn't realize that I suffered from anxiety until we were driving in the woods on our vacation, as I told you, in the green room, and we saw these signs that explain the wildlife. And I had no idea at how dark these roads were, how fast we were driving, and how things could just change in a flicker. My heart started to beat. I really had never experienced deep anxiety like I did. I was telling my husband, okay, turn the music down. Okay, slow down. I was breathing kind of fast. People that have anxiety attacks, you know, I empathize with you babies, because it can take you out. It's a very scary thing. And again, I wanted to be very optimistic. Okay, we only have 100 miles to go like this. We'll get through, no problem. But then I'm looking at some of these other patents, and you know, my husband is more of, you know, the heady person, the helper, and he's like, no, baby, just calm down. It's gonna be all right. You know, don't worry about it. He sees us through this, and I'm combative. It can be a challenge if you live with it your entire life. So you have to know these things. What is an 8 and a 9? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, just the last thing on the 7 there is that, it, you know, anxiety is actually runs almost like I was saying, like in the background as an operating. But most people who are 7s don't necessarily notice that, because they've got so used to pushing it down, because we're looking at the positive.
Right.
So 8s are all about being in control, and they're the ones you'll know at the presence of an 8 when they come in the room. They're also sometimes known as the challenger. They're the ones that will get in your face and they say, I'm right, it's my way or the highway.
I'm a little 8-ish, you could have, you see this is where you might have
a predominant number, but to but what you're doing is you might have flavor of the other ones. So what's an 8 needs to be against something, to push to, and what they're doing really is they're protecting themselves, because they learned at a very young age that being vulnerable is not acceptable. So you can't show your heart, you can't cry, you can't show that vulnerability. So it's almost like they wear a suit of armor, and they're tough and they're strong and they're in your face, and they'll, they're assertive and strong. But what they're doing is that it's very much about expanding their reach of control and dominance. They want to be in
control. But that can also be construed as arrogance, you know, If you don't understand who you are and how to manage that, it's great to have that skill set, to have that trait. But if you are crushing down other individuals in the process, it's not a good thing. It's not a good look.
Right. I coached in the corporate world. I coached a senior executive who was. He was trying to become a director, but the other directors were getting fed up of him, because he was in the face, he was aggressive, he was like, do it my way, I'll do it this way. And he'd actually made several members of his team, and it was like a couple of his team cry at certain points. So I was brought in to actually work with him to see, you know, when I met him the first time, he was sat at his desk like this, and he had his head, his hands behind his head like this. And he said, oh, you're the girlie who's come to make me a director. And they were his first words to me when I saw him. So I reminded him of those words a few months later when I was working with him. But what it was, again, was helping him to see what it was like being on the receiving end of him. And, you know, and whilst he was passionate and strong, and as soon as people were in his team and he'd built that trust with them. You know, some people love that aggression type of thing, and some people are attracted to it. A lot of people are scared of it. So once he'd actually built trust with people, his 8s are like a big, massive marshmallow truck. You know, they're hard and rugged on the outside, but soft and squishy on the inside. So once you become into the fold, into the family, you know, they will protect you, they will look after you and everything like that. So yeah, you can, I mean, certainly in my work, very much so in when I was working in the corporate world, 3s and 8s were, for different reasons, were very much like the bang, 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 the 3, let's get things done. they ain't let's get things done and do it my way or no way. And I'm not, like you were saying earlier on about people not listening and so on, it's very easy to come across with that arrogance or aggression, and people would back down. So learning that, and one of the key things I say to people often is, what is it like being on the receiving end of you? And are you afraid, and do we need to be afraid? Eights would probably say to you, I don't care. But if they're open enough to learn and grow,
I do care, but I keep moving forward. And I love to up level other individuals.
Right.
I'm a steamroller, absolutely. But that once that pavement is smooth, I want everybody to drive across it. Absolutely. So again, it's learning to balance that. I get it.
Yeah, and just last thing with the eight is often that that's how in the corporate world often, people are taught how to, come on, you've got to be one of the boys, you've got to be tough, you've got to be strong, you've got to do this. And again, these are all patterns. None of it's the truth. They're all patterns that we use as defense mechanisms to keep us in the place where we are. But he'd reached the end of that. He couldn't get to that directorship because he was getting results and everything, but he wasn't looking in the wing mirror or the rear view mirror to see how many people he'd run over in the process as he was driving. So it was really interesting. And he did become a director. He was open, and he opened his heart to learning and growing. It was phenomenal. So shall I tell you about nine? We touched a little bit on nine. Nine is all about keeping the peace. And avoiding conflict and avoiding, anything that could get in the way of that. So they need to avoid in that sense. So they're easygoing, they're calm, they're peaceful, they'll get along with other people. There's that kind of a fuzziness to a nine, they might sit back a little bit. Deepness of a nine, unconsciously, often they're not, they don't think that they are as valuable as other people. They don't think their opinion is valuable, or they don't think that they should have their say. I'm not saying they won't say things, but when they're kind of lost in their pattern and they're in that unconscious, like you were saying earlier on, that dullness, numbness, then they'll back down or they'll stay quiet. They just want to keep the peace and they might oscillate from one thing to another. Coaching nines often, one of the things to help nines is to help, they forget to remember what they need to remember. So their own goals go out of the window. It's everybody else's goals first. And because they don't feel that theirs are that important, but they forget what their goals are. So priorities and what's important to them go out. They forget. They might even not even know what they want sometimes, or they'll get busy doing other things, and they'll be so busy doing other things, often for other people, but a different energy than it is for the two. But they'll not achieve the things they want to achieve. So it's helping them stay on track, helping them what is my priority? What is the one thing I need to do today? That kind of thing to keep on.
So how do you get with these clients, and how do they, and this is the only thing that I've done that's come close to this, is like a Myers-Briggs. Do they do a personality assessment? Do you have a questionnaire that they answer these questions that kind of lead you to their type? People tell themselves.
Yeah, it's not always as easy. There are questionnaires out there. There are tools out there that you can use. But I come from the philosophy that they're not always that accurate, because the challenge might be you can move around with the numbers.
Right. I was looking at that and I was like, am I going to be stuck as a 7 or an 8? I want to be a 2.
Nobody wants to be a 2. Nobody wants to be a 2. Nobody wants to be a 4.
Yeah, I want to bend over backwards for you a little bit. I want to be a helper. I want to do that. I don't, strength is only as good as it is.
You need to know yourself well. You need to be pliable.
You need to be flexible. You need to be able to bend. You need to be self-actualizing. You need Absolutely. To be aware of it. People are not aware. They're so, again, stuck in this framework. that they've never seen outside of themselves. And they wonder why people don't like you, or they wonder why people talk behind your back, or people don't want to be your friend, or, you know, when you come in the room, you're the one that sucks all the oxygen out. Yes. They don't understand this. So for you to do this and really integrate this into a corporate setting, I think is absolutely phenomenal. I was listening to what you were saying, and it falls into the framework of some other modalities and even astrology. Astrology. When you look at, you know, a lot of people don't want to talk about their zodiac sign. I'm a Leo. There's that 7 or 8 springing right up, but we're misunderstood. We are very loyal, you know,
right.
But then reciprocating, I expect your loyalty as well. So there's certain things that go along with that. So, you know, again, it falls right in line. This is really great. You've been doing this for how long?
I've been working with the Enneagram for probably now 15 years.
Wow, you've mastered it. It's beautiful.
And there's still so much to learn, because you are your best student, really, because you know there's still levels of learning and going deeper and deeper. And the thing with the Enneagram, you say you have this dominant type, but you do have a wing either side. So if you're a 7, you could have a 6 wing or an 8 wing. So it's like a little blending and flavoring of the other. And when you're under stress as a 7, I tried everything as a 7 and you're really under stress, you move to 1. So you will bring some of the characteristics of 1. So when you're actually doing a test, this is why online tests don't always work. You might be responding, you might be under stress when you're doing it, and you might be responding it from more of a 1-y flavor. So you might end up typing as a 1 rather than a 7. So one of the best ways I've learned to, and how I help people is, yes, I can use, and I do use sometimes I use the Rizzo and Hudson, that's R-I-S-O and Hudson, their type indicator. It's called RETI, which is R-H-E-T-I, if you look it up on the, if you look it up on the internet. Rizzo and Hudson, I love their book as well, The Wisdom of the Enneagram. That's the one of the ones I always recommend when people are learning and wanting to learn more about the Enneagram as a resource. You could do that type indicator, and that will give you a flavoring. I use things like that, and it's just like a GPS satellite position. It's a bit like you go out to your car, it's going to tell you where you are right now. Now that gives you a kind of a where you are, but then, you know, understanding and learning about it then is you start to get nuances. So that's why I do one-on-one work with clients, that if they're interested in learning more about their type and wanting to know their type. One thing I'd be happy to share with your brains is I do have a little mini training on how to self-type. So I could give you the details of that. And I don't know whether you can post that. Would you post that? Or do you want me to?
Are you kidding me? Absolutely, because I want you to know your Enneagram type just like your blood type.
You need to know
who you are. That, and it's not a negative, it's a positive, because if you know how you are, you know how you're able to blend and gel into a corporation. Absolutely. You will be able to pick and create a dynamite team, because you will know what these individuals want, how to support them, how to encourage them, where they might fall short of an expectation, and not your expectation, but the expectation of others, how to be able to support them when they're being judged or characterized or bullied by others. You are more empathetic, you are more sympathetic to this situation. So this is a magical tool. I could see people in HR all over the world, you know, again, yes, corporate levels, but building great teams. I have been very, very fortunate, like I said, to work with some great people that have really wanted to build a strong organization. And this is the footing. This is the groundwork. This is the foundation, knowing who you are and how to support those people, where to build them up where they're weak.
Well, it gives you a language to talk to as well. So if you, I talk all the time about talking Enneagram. I talk Enneagram with my friends and my clients as well. Because
do they think because you know the difference. I'm sorry to interrupt. But do they think you're talking about this, Eli? Oh, man, here she comes. She's going to, knows who we are. I mean, I say that because you're seven. I say that, with love. But they're like, oh, shit.
It's been a seven again.
Yeah, we can't just sit here and have a glass of wine without being, analyzed.
Well, I think what happens is, most people, if not everyone, I don't think I've met anybody yet that I've worked with that's not, and again, you're not going to force the Enneagram onto people. So, if people are interested in it, I use it in the background.
But it becomes who you are. It's like, it's like a painter. They're always looking for inspiration. It's like a cook. They're always tasting the food. It's a part of who you are. And that's not a negative at all.
No,
you'd be a great person to have around, because I'm like, hey, Elaine, what you thinking about? Is that a 2-3? What is that? Or,
Well, it is fun from there. And if you remember, a lot of us are in pattern. So the pattern's a bit like sediment that forms over time, because our experiences, and then we repeat our experience unconsciously, when something happens, we react to it. So it becomes like sediment. So what you're doing by creating this conscious awareness, you're breaking the pattern. You're creating a pattern interrupt and having different choices of approach. So you can do things differently. So, by talking Enneagram, I find that when people start to learn their own numbers, by learning their own number first, and as I say, I work with coaches, therapists, and consultants and leaders, but most of these people are leading other people, or teaching or coaching other people.
Right.
So what they're finding is that I run a program called Enneagram and the Coach, which is a certified program as well, and they can learn about themselves first of all at a deep level, learning about their own number and the nuances, what are the talents and the gifts that you can lean toward and do more of that naturally, that help in terms of the energetics and everything. But also we can learn about our stuck spots, we can learn about our blind spots, we can learn about how we get in our own way. And just by knowing that, we know it's pattern and it's not the truth of who you are. Mm-hmm. It creates that gap between stimulus and response, and we start to get curious, and it's like, it's just pattern again. It's my fourness. Oh, it's my sixness.
Right. Right.
And therefore, then that's where it becomes a language, because we recognize how we get in our way, and we know we're all learning and growing and trying to move forward. So a lot of my clients then take this and are using it with their clients. So they're actually learning how to coach with the Enneagram, learning how to support other people, helping them to find their way so they can be more self-aware. They have a different sense of self. They can make better choices. They can look at what is the strength of that number and how they can use more of that in their daily life.
Wow.
And it reduces the triggers too. So it's, yeah. Fascinating,
it is extremely fascinating. It is, and yeah. I've enjoyed this so much. Please tell my brains how to get in contact with you if they want to understand who they are, do deep diving, build dynamite teams, and
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah. If you go to my website, which is coachbrilliant.com, so it's the word coach, the word brilliant. .com. I put brilliant in there because I'm an English woman and we use brilliant a lot. So it's coachbrilliant.com. If you go to /contacts, or even on that website, just go to coachbrilliant.com, look for the contacts tab in there, and we can catch up on a quick call. I'm happy to talk to you about the Enneagram or whatever your needs are, and contact you from there. If you're somebody who's interested in the Enneagram and the Coach program, you're a coach, consultant, or a therapist and a service-based business owner that coaches people, then if you go into my program and certification tabs, the Enneagram and the Coach program's there, so you can have a look at it. And if you have any questions, you can always reach me at info@coachbrilliant.com.
Well, brains, I want you to be brilliant brains.
Thank you
so
there you go.
Much, Eileen. This has been extremely fascinating. It really has. I'm going to go in and check it out. I want my brains to go in and check it out again, so that we self-actualize, that we become better people, that we know who we are. You may not want to share that with the world. It might be personal, it might be intimate, but knowing is half the battle.
Absolutely. And if you have that, if you're compassionate, enough to yourself and you're allowed, you're open and you're allowing yourself to grow, right. Then this can make a huge difference in your life. As I say, this knowing the Enneagram, learning the Enneagram has completely changed my life and how I coach. And I get, you know, it's phenomenal in terms of how deep you can go and how deep you can grow and how I can serve my clients at a much deeper level than I ever could before.
And that you can understand fact from fiction, that you can change your perception, that you become a kinder, gentler person because you know who you are, what that expectation is of others, and how to blend in and not control. It's not about control. It's about merging. It's about blending because we are all different and we are put on this planet to do different things. Brains, I need you to go in, like, love, subscribe to me and Eileen's website.
Elaine.
Elaine. Oh, I call it Elaine.
No worries. I get called that a lot, actually.
And so, you know, it's really getting the name right.
I actually answer to it now because people call me it sometimes, so don't worry. but
we just really, really love you and the work that you do, and thank you so much for being here with us on the Edge. Be careful with that wildlife outside.
Well, I promise. I'll keep the door between me and them. Don't worry.
Yes, good. Keep that boundary there so they'll have that.
Absolutely. Boundaries are important.
Exactly. Thank you again for being here on the Edge. Come back and see me again soon.
I will, April. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
All right. Bye, brains.